Hello and welcome to History in Reverse, a father-daughter science fiction podcast. Today we will be discussing two short stories about time travel. The first is The Merchant and the Alchemist's Gate by Ted Chiang, and the second is Star Diaries, The Seventh Voyage by Lem. Welcome to History in Reverse. My name is Caroline. I'm here with my father, Richie.
Hello.
And we are discussing two short stories, one by Ted Chiang, one of my favorite authors, and one by Lem.
Again,
somehow I have been tricked into reading a Lem story, and man, did it give me a headache.
Just to say, which one should we do first?
I read the Alchemist one first. Would you read the...
Yeah, so we can start with
that one. Yeah, do that one.
So the Ted Chiang story is from his latest collection called Exhalations.
That's not where Story From Your Life is from. That's from...
No, Story of Your Life was the first collection of stories.
Right.
And this is actually the very first story in it. And what can you say? The one thing about this story that I really, really liked was the setting, like the atmosphere. It reminded me of these 1001 Arabian Nights kind of a story.
Oh, definitely. I think it was definitely a play on that. I think that was intentional. Right. Yeah. So, I mean, do you want to just jump right into the plot and start talking through it?
Right. Yeah, let's talk through the plot. And many spoilers, so if you haven't read it, stop listening. Go read the story, and you really enjoy it. Mm-hmm. And then you come back.
It's not long. It's really good.
Yeah.
So, basically, it's set... Ooh, I don't know what time period it's set in, like... Ancient Middle East? Near past.
Near past, yeah.
Yeah. And our main character is a merchant, and he meets an alchemist. It's kind of in the title. And he meets an alchemist who has a really neat thing in his shop. So do you want to describe what he's got?
Right. Well, he goes into this shop in Baghdad. So the two cities are Cairo and Baghdad. Mm-hmm. And so he's in Baghdad. And he's shopping, and he sees this shop with these very interesting devices. They're very fancy, like clockwork type of devices, doing all kinds of strange things. And he meets the guy who makes them. And he says, well, you think this is cool, but come in the back, and I'll show you something really cool. Mm-hmm. And what does
he says, come in the back, and I'll show you the plot of the story. Come here. Yeah, so he takes him in the back, and he shows him... these portals.
Right. So the first portal is like a smallish portal, and puts his hand on one side and nothing happens. Hand kind of disappears. Mm-hmm. And then a few seconds later, the hand appears on the other side of the portal.
Right. And it's like the way, and I like how Ted Chiang describes the portals, because for at least for me, it gave me a very clear image of it. It was like a metal ring kind of on a stand, relatively small. So he sticks, like you said, he sticks his hand through. And it takes, it's like a few second delay, and then the hand appears on the other side. And the merchant thinks, oh, cool, a magic trick.
And the guy says, no, not really. What happens, this is a 5 second gate. If you put your hand in from the right side, let's say, then whatever you put in on the right side will appear 5 seconds in the future. Mm-hmm. And if you put things from the left side, the thing will appear 5 seconds in the past. Mm-hmm. And he demonstrates some tricks with this guy with the ring. I think he kind of steals his ring.
Yeah, he reaches his hand through and steals his ring. and so our merchant's like, oh, neat.
And says, well, and the guy says, the alchemists, you know, he tries to kind of explain that it's alchemy, meaning science of and how the time space has holes and stuff like that.
Yeah, so, and the... Gibberish, tech.
Right. So then he says, but you think this is good, but check out the big gate I have even further back in the store. Mm-hmm. So they go back and he says, this is the 20-year gate. And if you go from the left to right, you come out 20 years in the future. Mm-hmm. And if you go from right to left, in theory, you would come out 20 years in the past. However, because I just built this gate here, you cannot go in the past just yet. You can only go into the future.
Right, because the gate itself is not 20 years old.
Right, so if you went you can't go back because there's nowhere to come out of.
Right. Which is just so trippy.
Right.
Like, thinking about that, it's just like so interesting. So the merchant's like, oh, this is cool. And he's like, has anyone ever gone through?
And he says, yes, of course. And but he says, well, you just built it, so how could you have gone in the past? He says, well, you know, I've only moved to Baghdad, and I was in Cairo for the longest time, and there's a gate there that my nephew runs the store now, and it's there. So let me tell you a story of some people who went through this gate and what happened to them, right? Mm-hmm. So he tells him the story of the fortunate rope maker. Remember mm-hmm. that one? Right. So there was this, since there was this young man who was a rope maker, and mm-hmm. he came to his store, and he was curious what Cairo would look like, you know, 20 years in the future. Mm-hmm. So he just said, okay, I'll just pop to the gate to the future. And he walked around in Cairo and was talking to somebody, and he said, oh yeah, he wanted to tell his fortune. No, somebody wanted to tell him his fortune. So he says, you know, do you want your fortune told? Do you want to find out if you're going to be wealthy or not? And he says, well, how could I ever be wealthy? You know, I'm just a simple rope maker. And says, well, but you know, but this guy Hassan, really rich merchant, he started like as a rope maker. You should go, you know. And mm-hmm. and he realized that the guy had the same name as him. His name was Hassan, which is just mm-hmm. so he goes to his house, right? Direct him, and he rings the doll, you know, knocks on the door, whatever. And the guy opens, says, oh, hi, finally, you finally got here.
Yeah, I was expecting you. Come on in.
So,
yeah, and so they have this like nice little meeting. And I guess this kind of starts to get into the time paradox ish kind of stuff where like older Hassan knew younger Hassan would come because obviously he had been younger Hassan. Right. And so he gives younger Hassan some like business advice.
Well, so I was just looking at this today. So what happened was they have dinner and stuff, and he tells him, when you go back, you know, when you go to market like tomorrow or whatever, make sure to walk on the other side of the street than the one that you usually take. Mm-hmm. Just trust me, just do it. And he sends him back, and then you'll know when to come back. So the guy does that, and the next day he walks across, you know, and it's like he said, rather than walking on the shady side of the street, he walked on the sun side of the street, which was hot, right, because it's Cairo. And there was a horse runaway, and it was an accident. And if he had been on the other side of the street, he would have been injured or killed, and he wasn't, right? So he says, oh, that's cool. So he goes back, and he gets a little advice about, you know, what to do, how to run his business, and he becomes more and more successful. And then there's kind of interesting thing that happens where at one time Hassan is in his own time, right? Mm-hmm. And he's made some money because he sold some rope or whatever, and he's walking around with a bunch of money in his little money sack. And a kid steals it. And he says, wow, why wasn't I warned about this? So he chases the kid down, and he's like, you know, eventually catches up to him and gets his money back. So when he goes back to talk to his future self, he says, why didn't you warn me about this? And he says, well, didn't you enjoy catching the thief? And he says, well, yeah, actually, yes. I didn't want to spoil it. And that's a kind of a theme that runs through this whole, the conversations, is that he only reveals some things. He doesn't want to reveal everything because he doesn't want to spoil the future for him.
Yeah, which kind of gets to this theme that we've seen in other stories about the future being fixed.
Yeah, this goes back to Stories You're Alive, of course, right?
Oh, yes. Right. Fantastic theme. Love it.
Yeah, I got some quotes, actually, I want to read in a bit. So then he tells him where to find some treasure, and he finds a treasure, becomes kind of rich, and so on, and they live happily ever after. So that was the first story, right? That was the weaver that was the fortunate rope maker.
Yes.
So the second story was something called Weaver Who Stole From Himself.
Well, so before the second story happens, the merchant who's hearing the story from the alchemist is like, that's neat. Like, what a great use of this gate. You've made a wonderful invention. And the alchemist is like, well, this doesn't always turn out the best, you know. Like, let me tell you another story.
Right.
Like, that was a really good example. Let me tell you another one. So then he goes ahead and tells the other one.
Right. So this one was kind of similar thing. The weaver, right? How did he come about having some money? I think he discovered the treasure, right?
I think, was it the weaver that digs up the money? No, the weaver, doesn't he steal from himself, right?
Well, he steals from himself. Right. So, this is what happens, right? So
this one confused me. That's what I was reading. I was confused. Yeah.
So the weaver heard the story of the rope maker.
Right.
And he says, oh, well, I wonder if I'm also a big shot in the future. So he goes into the future and finds that he's not a big shot. Mm-hmm. He's living in the same house he lived when he was 20 years earlier. And so he goes there. He opens his key still opens the door. He goes in the house and looks under the bed, and there's a chest full of money. Mm-hmm. So he takes it. He steals from himself.
Because he thinks, why would I be living like this when I have all this? Like, clearly future me is like just wasting this money. Right. So I'm going to take it. And this is how I'm going to use it.
Right.
Yeah.
So he takes it back and he uses it. He starts living lavishly. You know, he gets to marry the woman that he loves because he has all the money. He's living on a high. And then one day when he gets home, he discovers that his wife was kidnapped. Mm-hmm. And you know, he loved her wife. He loved his wife and stuff. They basically asked him to pay all the money that he had to get his wife back. Mm-hmm. So which he did.
Pay the ransom. Mm-hmm.
Right. So he paid the ransom, and he has his wife, but no money. Mm-hmm. And basically, like, his wife was kind of started getting suspicious. Like, just, where did you get all this money from? And said, did you steal it or something? Mm-hmm. He says, no. It was given to me. But somehow the marriage kind of went off the track, and they kind of became a bit of misers. And he knew that his future self would come to get the money. So he started saving everything. So rather than spending, he would just put everything away. So they lived very poorly, kind of miserably, until his past self came and stole.
Yeah, his past self came to the future that was the present to steal it. But yeah, it's another story of sort of accepting fate. Like, he knows that he needs to scrimp and save to fill the chest for his future self to get the money, so that then, or rather his past self,
to get the money, right?
So that then he will be able to pay the ransom for his, like, he continues, willingly continues the cycle.
Right. And
which
so,
is interesting.
Right. And then a wife and her lover was kind of back to Hassan, the first guy. He was the one who dug up the treasure, right? And he was trying to sell a necklace. And the bandits whose treasure it was, sold him, tried to sell the necklace. Mm-hmm. And he said, wait a second, you know, this is the guy that took our treasure, right?
So the last story is from, is it Hassan's point of view, or it was the merchant's wife?
It's Hassan still.
It's Hassan's wife, okay.
There's the one last one is the merchant himself. So Hassan goes, so Hassan's wife from the future, right, when she saw the young man, she says, oh, he's cool looking. I liked him back then. I still like him. Yeah. So she went back through the gate to kind of follow him around and see what he's doing. And she saw him trying to sell this necklace.
Mm-hmm. Which was a necklace she had.
Which is a necklace she had, and the buyer kind of was somewhat interested, but then the bandits saw one of the bandits saw him, so he says, So they started planning to kind of go after him, right? Mm-hmm. So what she did, since she had the necklace, and she went back.
Well, she pulls it out. So
She actually got yet another copy of herself, right? So she went back to her time. They went forward to get herself 20 years hence. So there were two of them and showed up at the market when Hassan showed up trying to sell the necklace. And they said, look, this is like a necklace. Anybody can make that. There are tons of them. I have one.
Yes, exactly. It's very clever.
So the merchant wouldn't buy it, and while the leader of the bandits was there as well, and he saw this, and it said to the other guy, his little minion, saying, oh, you idiot. You thought it was one of those necklaces. So he wasn't able to sell
it. Totally worthless, yes.
So then the middle lady decided to seduce Hassan.
Young Hassan.
Young Hassan, right.
Yes.
And she was disappointed. Because she remembered when she married him, as he was much better lover. So she mm-hmm. trained him.
She yeah, said, basically. Very clever so use of the clever. Gate there. Right. Yeah.
So that was that story. So the merchant who was the narrator of the story, his wife mm-hmm. Was killed in the building collapse in Baghdad, mm-hmm. right?
Yes.
And so he said, I wish I could go back and see her or prevent it or something. Mm-hmm. So the guy said, well, you know, you can try, but you can't change the future or the past. But he tries anyway. So he goes to Cairo.
Right. So he can't even try from Baghdad because the gate is too new.
Right.
Right. Right. He can't go far enough back.
Right.
So he has to travel to Cairo to use that gate.
Right. So he goes to Cairo and he goes through a gate, and it's 20 years earlier, and it's before the time his earthquake happened and the house collapsed, right? So mm-hmm. he's trying to make it to Baghdad from Cairo, and everything goes wrong.
Yes. Everything does go wrong. Yes, he's coming back from Cairo and everything does go wrong. But they had like a sandstorm.
Right. The caravan was delayed for this.
The caravan is slow. He tries to go off on his own and he runs out of water and he has to go back.
Yeah, he gets robbed. Yeah. He has no money. So eventually he makes it to Cairo, but it's too late, right? The building had just collapsed and his wife just died. So the only thing that happens is that he speaks to somebody who saw his wife just before she died. And I think we forgot to say that before he left for his trip, the business trip went, or the day that this happened, he had like an argument with her in the morning or something.
Yeah.
And kind of they left in a tiff. Mm-hmm. And there was a person there who was like a nurse or something who was in the hospital when she died and said she had a message for you. She said that, you know, the time she spent with you were the happiest times of her life, mm-hmm. or something like that, something very, very kind of nice. So he mm-hmm. felt slightly better.
Yeah. So I forget at the end of the story, and I don't have,
I have it here
on my phone. He's telling this whole, he himself, the merchant, is telling this whole story to someone else.
He's talking to the Sultan, right? So he's basically, right. By the time he got from Cairo to Baghdad, he has no money, he's got nothing. Mm-hmm. And he's 20 years back in the past, right?
So at the end, he's telling the Sultan because doesn't he offer help to the Sultan? Doesn't he say something like, I can tell you things that are going to happen?
Right, yeah, I can kind of help you with some decisions and stuff. But he said, so the last sentence of the story is, nothing erases the past. There is repentance, there is atonement, and there is forgiveness. That is all, but that is enough. In other words, he thought that his wife was angry at him or something, but she wasn't. Mm-hmm. And the other quote that I like, which goes back to this idea of past and the future being the same, mm-hmm. or unchangeable, says, past and the future are the same, and we cannot change either, only know them more fully. My journey to the past had changed nothing, but what I had learned had changed everything.
Oh, yeah, that was a good line. So what I find interesting about Ted Chiang's stories that are like this, and he obviously really likes this theme.
Right.
Because he can't stop himself from writing about it.
Stories of my life was exactly this. The same thing,
exactly.
Right?
And it's beautiful. It's a beautiful theme. It's a kind of comfortable theme because time travel isn't real so far. Mm-hmm. So it's a nice, comforting way to kind of explore with your reader that, like, you know, things happen for a reason, or there is a fate, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. But what I find interesting is that, like, in other time travel stories, time travel is actually possible and you can actually change, you know, you can have effects on the timeline and, you know, create multiple timelines or whatever it is you do.
Right.
Ted Chiang's answer to that paradox is to say, no, you can't.
Right.
Ted Chiang's solution is to say, nope.
Nope.
Nope, it's fixed. Sorry. Ooh, nope, you can't. No paradoxes, none allowed. Because, like, the, you know, Hassan character is the kind of character that, like, when he learns about his future, will do all the things to get there. But the other guy, the thief, easily could have decided after ransoming his wife, you know, could have decided, you know, I'm gonna try to change the timeline. I'm not gonna save all this money and see what happens. And, you know, who knows what would have happened in a science fiction context there. But he didn't. He just kind of accepted
that. Yeah, I think that was a conversation that the merchant had with the alchemist, where he said, well, you know, if I know that I'm going to be alive 20 years from now, right, you know, because I step through the gate and see myself, you know, then I'll be taking all kinds of crazy risks. And
right, because you know, I know I'm going to, that was a good point.
The alchemist says, yeah, but maybe somebody who thinks like that would not be alive 20 years from now.
Exactly. You know what this reminds me of, too? Did you ever read the story August Heat?
I don't think so.
It's a very short story, but it deals with this concept of fate and
accepting. Oh, no, I think I did read it. I vaguely remember it.
Yeah, it deals with the same concept. Listeners, if you read August Heat, I'm sure it's available online. It's like a few pages long. It's really interesting. But we did not read that story for this podcast. What is the second story we read? Okay. Oh, do you want me to try to describe the second story we read for this podcast? Okay,
let me give you just the background information. So the second story is there's a collection of stories called Star Diaries that Lem wrote over many years. So I think the earliest is from early 50s. Mm-hmm. And the most recent one was like in the early 70s. And they have this character named Eon Tihir. Mm-hmm. Who's a kind of bumbling space traveling guy. Mm-hmm. A lot of these stories were kind of mostly, some people said they're like in the spirit of Gulliver's Travels.
Yeah, I could see that, yeah.
Because each story is like there's different voyage and stuff, and different things happen to him. Some of them are very political, mm-hmm. you know, poking fun communists, for example, in a funny way. Actually, there's one story that you can interpret today that's like, he describes like two different planets, when one is clearly Republican and one is clearly Democrat, you know, like to the extreme. And it's mm-hmm. we should probably read it at some point. So he's not serious. It's not a serious character. It's not trying to be a serious story, but he makes some interesting points. So this particular story was kind of a farce, I thought.
Oh my God, it hurt my head so much.
So tell us what happened.
So the basic plot is that our intrepid space traveler is on his little rocket going someplace, and the rudder on his rocket breaks. Which is, do spaceships have rudders? So the rudder breaks, and he's like, oh, I gotta fix that, otherwise I can't navigate. But then he's like, oh no. It takes two people to fix it. Like, the way to use the tool, you need two people, which seems like a very flawed design.
Well, he said, you know, it's like, you know, you can't reach around the whatever rudder to tighten the bolt. It's like, did you, and like when he tries to fix it, he loses one of his tools, which rather than flying off into space, starts orbiting his rocket.
And he throws like a sirloin steak at some point too.
Yeah.
That starts orbiting the rocket. This is so funny.
And then he sits and calculates the eclipse times for.
Yes, he does. The language is also like really good. Like I'm assuming it was translated right from the Polish.
Yeah.
The translation is excellent. It really is. So he's got this problem. This rudder's broken. He can't navigate his ship, and he can't do it by himself. He can't fix it. So he ends up accidentally encountering these like time vortices.
Right. So he winds up being in this weird region of space where there's not too many planets where he could like call for help, call AAA or whatever you call.
Can't get any signal out there.
Yeah. Right. And there's these vortices that like distort space, and his rocket starts falling into them.
Yes.
So what happened? So on Monday, this happens, and then he goes to sleep after trying different things. Mm-hmm. And then what happens?
And he gets woken up by someone shaking him awake, and the person's like, wake up, wake up. And he's like, I must be dreaming, because I'm alone on this rocket. Therefore, you're a dream, and I am tired, so I am not getting up. And and this man is shaking him, and this man's like, oh, you fool, like, you've got to get up. And he's like, no, you're a dream. I'm not losing any beauty sleep. I am staying asleep. And he goes back to bed. And then it turns, I forget what the exact next step is. The next day is Tuesday.
Right.
And he Is that when he realizes that there's the time paradoxes? It gets so confusing.
Right. He realizes that he sees...
He sees himself making an egg.
Right.
Yeah. He sees himself...
cooking breakfast.
But one thing he realized about the man from the night before was that it was himself.
Right.
Because he recognized his face. But he figured it was a dream because of that. He's like, I'm obviously dreaming about... I'm having a weird dream because it's me shaking me awake. So it can't be real. And then the next day he sees like a flash, like a moment of himself making eggs at the stove. But it goes away. And then I think he begins to unpack that. Oh, a book hits him. That's what happens. The rocket is like going into these vortices, and it shakes a lot. And all the books and papers he has in this future rocket go flying around the room, and a copy of a physics book like hits him in the face, and he like opens it and reads it and realizes that there's some kind of time paradox happening, and that's what he's seeing himself in the future and in the past.
Basically. Right, from like different days.
From a few days, yeah. And so then, on Tuesday, when he realizes this, he sees his Monday self sleeping, and he goes over to try to shake his Monday self awake.
Because figures two people can go and fix the rudder.
Right, he's like, this is great, I have two people. And he tries to shake his Monday self awake, and his Monday self is like, no, this is a dream. And the shenanigans just spiral out of control.
Right. Then there's a Wednesday self, and then they have a fight. Like somebody gets banged in the face, and he's in the bathroom.
There's like they start to be violent with each other, and then there's more and more of them. And then eventually, they get to a point where they're sort of starting to talk about working together. And then but he realizes that there's only one spacesuit, so he needs to not only duplicate himself in time, but he needs to duplicate the spacesuit.
Right.
Which just leads to all kinds of chaos.
Right, because he tries to put a spacesuit and his next day self says, this didn't work. See, I don't have a spacesuit.
Yeah.
So I should put a spacesuit on and then start fighting over it.
And then a few... It's so interesting to me that he uses days of the week to distinguish.
Right.
Like as if days of the week will still exist. Like as if those will still be around like in the... far distant future on rockets.
But
like,
I mean, you can have a clock, right? So
yeah. So eventually, he hits so many dense vortices. How do you say it?
Vortices.
He hits so many of them. He duplicates so much that like the rocket's like packed with people. And this is my favorite part of the story because they like elect a committee. To fix this one very small problem. They like elect a committee. They start to nominate people. So, because some of them have spacesuits, some of them don't. They start to nominate the people who are going to go out and fix the rudder and all these things. But in the meantime, they keep hitting more vortices and people are appearing and disappearing.
Right.
So before they can go fix it, they disappear. And then they have to do it again. They have to restart the elections. They have to rewrite the bylaws at one point. Like... they couldn't get a quorum at one point. Like it was so funny. I loved it. But then the story kind of fixes itself. Do you remember how
it was? Right. So I think at one point he finally wakes up. There's just only him.
Yep.
And it appears the rocket has been fixed. Mm-hmm. Right. And he's kind of confused. And then he notices the spacesuit. What did he notice about the spacesuit?
The spacesuit was in the hallway on the floor. It was by the opening hatch on the floor.
Right.
So what had happened was some of his duplicates started to be really old, but also some of his duplicates started to be really young, and they were children in the crowd. And so what he figures out is that the children had snuck off, and two of them had gotten into the one spacesuit, gone out and fixed the rudder, and then come back in, and then, you know, he was able to continue on. So the children are our future. That's the theme of this story.
But yeah, it's he does that a lot in the stories where he makes crazy fun out of like political organizations, basically, you know, where people mm-hmm. argue about stuff.
That was the greatest. I loved that. So, I mean, I think one of the interesting things about Lem... So you were talking about the setting of the first of the Chang story. Mm-hmm. I thought the setting really gave the Alchemist story a lot of vividness, I guess. Right. A lot, like, right. I could see a lot of what he was describing because of the setting, because of the time period, because of the locations, and it was unique. You know, a lot of our classic science fiction stories take place in, like, generic space.
Right.
And kind of, I think, lack a thickness to them. They're kind of thin in that way.
Mm.
So the Lem story, which took place in kind of generic space, I think it was a really fun concept. It was really funny. If it was, like, a more modern story, it was written in, like, the 2000s, I think it would, for it to stand out, it would need something like what the Chang story has. Like, it would need some kind of setting or more characterization or something like that.
Well, again, you have to look at it. This is a story of a collection about this character, and he kind mm-hmm. of has all kinds of crazy adventures. Star Diaries, I've read it. The first time I've read it, I was like 12 years old.
Mm-hmm.
So I read some. I don't believe that particular story was in there. But he's got these stories where he goes on a hunt on a planet where the way you hunt this Wumpus,
mm-hmm.
you have to get eaten by it. So,
oh God!
So basically, you have to smear yourself with honey and carry a bomb, and you hope you get swallowed by one, so you can then set off the bomb, and that's.
Or, oh my goodness!
And
well, I guess the Lem story also has a more kind of whimsical.
Yeah.
It's like we've talked about this before. It's kind of like a fairy tale.
Yeah, it's not quite like the ones that we read, Siberia, were very fairy tales. This is very similar. I think of it as Gulliver Travels, but he uses that character in some insane things, right? Mm-hmm. So he's got a couple other time travel related stories along those lines. Like, there's one with the same guy where he comes from the future to himself
mm-hmm.
and hires himself to lead the project, large project, to fix history.
Oh gosh.
So he goes to the future to lead this project, and when people mess up, they get exiled in the past.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So, like, one of the guys who messed up was this guy named Leonardo da Vinci.
Wait a minute. Oh, that's so clever.
You know, and stuff like that. And says, because he killed the dinosaurs or something. Yeah. So.
Oh.
And, of course, it's like any large project and any organization, it has become a total mess. So that's like one thing.
Well, I think both these stories, maybe fairy tale is the wrong way to describe it, but I think both these stories have a kind of whimsical element to them that's kind of more on a fantasy kind of spectrum than necessarily right. a science fiction kind right. of spectrum. I mean, this is a conversation that's ongoing, is what's the difference between fantasy and science fiction?
Right. Like I said, the Chang story is very much like the 1001 Arabian Nights kind of a flavor.
Right, but the Lem story is a lot like Gulliver's Travels, right? So they both have these kind of, and they absolutely, I completely agree, they both have these kind of older literary roots
mm-hmm.
in the style. And I think that's interesting, especially considering how far apart they are written.
Right.
Right, because when was, you said Star Diaries was when?
In the 50s, 60s, 70s. So
right, this, and Exhalations came out
last year or 2 years ago. Or,
yeah. And they both kind of pull on those roots. I think that's really interesting.
So it's like, think of the time stories that we've read, right? So we have the classic Time Machine,
mm-hmm.
which only has to do with going into the future. All These Zombies, which is completely insane.
Yes.
and then there's Ted Chiang, who's kind of nice, and he says, timeline change? Nope.
No timeline change.
No timeline change.
It's definitely interesting, the different kind of experiences you get from the different time travel stories. You know, I think Time Machine, at least for me, was very anxiety producing, because he goes to the, he does this thing no one else has done. No one knows where he is.
Right.
He's got no help. And he gets stuck.
Right.
I think a lot of time travel stories, I like movies and TV shows, episodes of TV shows and things like that, the threat of getting stuck is kind of the big thing. A lot of times, like, how the drama is produced. Right. It's kind of a cheap drama, you know, very deep or anything like that.
Did you read Michael Crichton's Timeline?
No, I don't think so.
So that's his time travel story. Mm-hmm. It's somebody called it Jurassic Park with Knights.
Oh, cool.
Because they go back into the
I read Jurassic Park.
well, they go back into Middle Ages and they have to kind of avoid having a head chopped off by knights.
Well, so I guess there's sort of like, because I was going to get to a question. So there's like this, like the time machine, though it's about time travel, has a pretty linear story.
Right.
And has like a regular kind of story arc, right? Like there's a build up to a climax. There's a falling action. There's like this, that kind of thing. Then you have stories like the, like Star Diaries, that doesn't really follow a classic story arc. It's just like funny and entertaining.
Right.
And just the kind of just resolves because the story has to end, right? Yeah. Like there's no, the character doesn't do anything to earn that resolution. It just kind of does. And then you have things like Ted Chiang stories that are very nice because they like make you feel good because of like this, almost like the safety and the stability of the timeline. Then you have the same kind of concept, but in like All You Zombies, where you feel kind of out of control because of that structure. And I guess my ultimate question is like, which is the best one? Like, which is the best time travel story?
Well, I mean, there isn't a best one. It just depends what you like, right? I mean, you have to build up tension in a story, right? So that something, so it moves forward and you get engaged in it. Like the other one that I wanted us to read at some point is the Doomsday Book, which is traveling back to the time of the plague. And that's kind of fun and interesting. And it's like a classical kind of a story where the person gets stuck in the past and they have to kind of figure out. And this is Connie Willis. And she has another one called, which is more lighthearted, but traveling to, it's like to Jane Austen's time and doing that kind of a, it's called To Say Nothing of a Dog.
Oh, yes. I've heard of that. Yes.
Yeah.
I think it's interesting to, because they're all time travel stories, right? We did a bunch of time travel stories to compare them and to think about the different ways time travel is used. You know, obviously it's a personal choice what you think the best one is. The correct answer is Ted Chiang's versions. That's the correct. If you thought something else, you're wrong. Because I think in terms of like what you're teaching the audience or like what the audience is learning from consuming your story, your movie, your show, I think getting stuck in the past is just kind of a cheap plot device, right? But I think the teaching the concept that the timeline is set is really interesting.
But like, you know, if you look at Back to the Future movies, right? So timeline is not set, you know? And nowadays...
But that gives me so much anxiety to watch, right? Like... Which is fine. I mean, that's one way to build tension in a story is to make your viewer uncomfortable in a way.
Right.
But I guess it's like, what's like the theme you're taking away from it? You know, the theme you're taking away from Back to the Future is the timeline isn't stable and you can change things.
You can go back and change things. Yeah.
I mean, I guess the theme in those kind of stories is like, be thankful for what you have because you never, like once you change it, you'll realize how much you've lost. That's that kind of theme in that sort of story.
Mm-hmm. Actually, so one other thing I wanted to mention, so regarding the Lem story, remember there was an episode of Star Trek Voyager where they also fell into some kind of strange vortex where they were like 10 different times throughout the ship?
Yes, it's late, it's in like season 6 or 7.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I remember that episode because that, when I was a kid, I had not remembered the first few seasons of Star Trek, of Voyager, and there was that character Seska. The Cardassian?
Right.
Do you remember her?
Vaguely.
She's only in season one. And when the ship splits into different timelines, she appears. And I, as a kid, asked you, I'm like, who is that? And you were like, she was a character from earlier on. Rewatch the show, Caroline. Come on. But yeah, that was... there's been tons of time travel episodes in Star Trek.
There was a recent episode of Orville... you know, which you haven't watched, where they got stuck back in time. They traveled back in time to fix something. And to go forward, they actually got very clever because they got back in time and the time machine broke. Right. So the guy who's the engineer says, listen, we can just use the time dilation principle of Einstein. If we go very close to the speed of light, time will slow down and we can, you know, if we time it properly, we'll wind up in the future at the right point without having to win ink special.
Oh my goodness.
This is, remember, Return from the Stars was kind of based on that, right?
Mm-hmm.
Right, because when you travel close to the speed of light, the time slows down on the spaceship compared to the Earth. So,
which is still a concept I'll never understand. I've tried to understand time dilation, but I don't, and that's okay.
Right.
Oh, do you remember in the original Star Trek, they went, what was the episode where they go in the past and they save whales or something?
That was one of the movies.
Oh.
Yeah.
Now that's a good use of time travel, saving the whales.
I guess the only other thing I should mention, and if I remember, I'll include the link in the show notes, is somebody actually produced a play based on the story of the Lem story,
mm-hmm.
and it's available on YouTube. It's like a 30-minute video.
Oh, I gotta watch it. About this particular story, this specific
It's exactly this story.
Oh my God, that's so great.
You open it and it says, you know, the first sign, it says Monday.
Oh my God, that's fantastic.
It's called The Seventh Voyage of Egon Tihe.
So what are we, are we going to continue with time travel stories, or do you want to shift gears?
We can shift gears. I wouldn't mind. Do you want to do the Becky Chambers book, Psalm for the Wild-Built?
Yes. Psalm for the Wild-Built. I'm going to have to practice saying that one. Yeah, because you mentioned that to me, and it did sound really interesting.
Yeah, maybe I'll get that as an audiobook so I can listen to it.
Yeah, so we can do that. I think that would be great, because just you described the plot to me, and it sounded really good. So I'd like to do that one.
And maybe then
and
we
it's
can.
Short.
Yeah, it's short. Maybe you can. Then we can maybe do Tempest and Forbidden Planet.
Yes, I think that would be great.
You haven't seen Forbidden Planet, have you?
No, I've read The Tempest.
Well,
but
yeah.
I haven't seen it. I was an English major. They did make me read the Shakespeare. Yes.
Right.
I think that would be really good. Well, I mean, I guess one other question is just in terms of the time travel stories.
Mm-hmm.
How do you think the time travel, like the older time travel stories, have aged in terms of like how time travel stories are taught now or told?
Well,
now?
What happened was after the Time Machine of H.G. Wells kind of became a trope. You know, this going back in time or in the future and something goes wrong and then you have a hard time coming back. You know, there's a sequel to Time Machine that somebody wrote.
Oh, yeah, you told me about that, yeah.
And it goes into this multiverse kind of a thing.
Oh, God.
So.
Well, I'm curious. I wonder if H.G. Wells, like, you know, when he imagined Time Machine, and it was like the first real time travel story, like straight up time travel.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder if he thought about things like, changing the past, because he didn't write about changing the past and then going to the future. He only wrote about going to the future.
Right.
So it's almost like two different concepts. Like they're both time travel, but changing the timeline is kind of its own concept. It's interesting to me. It's interesting to me how that's kind of spiraled out and how it's interpreted in so many different ways. And I think it's a really great area for like stories to push themes, I guess, and like lessons, because time travel is currently impossible. So there is no answer.
Well, technically, you know, we're traveling in time forward 1 second per second. So
fair enough. Technically speaking, yes. So, okay. Is that everything?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, thanks for joining us at History in Reverse. Keep an eye out for our next episode, and we'll talk to you guys next time. Bye.
Bye. Recording now, so this will be the outtake. Hello, welcome to the outtake.
Oh, we planned our outtake in advance. We're very, very professional podcasters.
That's right. We were going to do one book, but apparently we switched timelines along the way. So.
Yes, we were going to do Three Body Problem, and I gave it a good college try. I did. I read the first two or three chapters, and it was too long.
You should use Charles's rule to do 100 pages, but
oh, geez. I read a lot at work, so it's hard for me to read long things.
That's all right. It's fine. So instead, we decided to do something else. Mm-hmm. And we picked two short stories. Yeah. Anyway, and you said next thing you want to do a book by Becky Chambers that I just read called Sound for the Well Built, which is good. I really enjoyed it, so I think it would be fun to read it.
Yeah, you told me about it, and I've been thinking about it since then. So I think since I've thought about it multiple times, I probably should read it at this point.
So one other thing I thought we would want to do, like a movie and text, I want to do The Tempest by Mr. Shakespeare, famous science fiction writer.
Yeah.
And there's a movie called The Forbidden Planet, which is based on it.
Oh, interesting. I would like to. I love The Tempest.
Yeah, and so we could probably do Becky Chambers for, well, whatever.
Yeah, anyway, we'll do something.
We'll figure it out.
We'll figure out our schedule.